The show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yeah, welcome back. The hours are flying by right here. Time for another hour of the best in money information. Another hour of the Bucket Strategy Investing program. We're giving you, with our hope, that's what we want, the best in money strategies and money information. I'm Johnny Dean. Professor Rick Plum is here with me once again from Lucia Capital Group, playing the part of our brain trust advisor for the hour. More topics to cover here. We got emails. We're going to get to those in just a couple of moments. And phone calls, too. Now, I got every line open right now. If you have a money question, whatever your money question is, take part in this forum. You can do so by calling us right now, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. If you want to add to the stack of emails that we'll be reading on the show this hour, you just go over to wealthed.com, click on the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. I said, while we wait for some phone calls, I will get to those emails immediately. Now, Professor Rick Plum, certified financial planner, and he returns this hour courtesy of the people at Lucia Capital Group. And we thank them for sponsoring this program for this hour. We do try on the show to deliver to you the strategies that are right for you, the money strategies that could potentially help you get through retirement. If you need to talk to an advisor off the air, you can certainly always call Professor Plum or any of the Lucia Capital Group advisors. The Brain Trust, we call them. Their off-air number, 800-644-1150. Your situation, that is unique to you, so you need to find out if your individual retirement goals and needs are being met. If they are not, you need to discuss that. With access to a network of Brain Trust advisors across the country, Lucia Capital Group can help you out. Once again, 800-644-1150. That's the off-air number. Talk to any of the advisors that they've got on hand, which can include Professor Rick Plum. Our number on the air, 877-PLANNER. And emails, I said, wealthed.com. And I meant it, wealthed.com at the Find Your Answer link. Let's get to some of these, Professor Plum, because they have been sitting here for a number of days. And I know you've answered some of these already off the air, but these are some great topics, and I want to cover some of these on the air. This is John in Casa Grande, Arizona. I will be 66 in April. My wife will be 66 in October of this year. At 62, she started drawing $500 from Social Security. I plan to work until I'm at least 68 years old. Do I file and suspend? Does my wife have to be 66 to draw half of my Social Security? Otherwise, she draws a reduced benefit. Do you have a better plan? So, first of all, file and suspend for John?
Well, if you wanted to file and suspend, you would have to do it before 68 years of age. You would have to do it by April, the end of April of this year. Now, you're going to be 66 in April, so you still have the file and suspend option. Now, whether or not, and I would imagine it's a better idea, that you file and suspend right away, and then your wife can get a benefit from your work record. She will not get 50%. She's younger than, she's only, well, she'll be 60, she's almost 66. She'll be 66 in October. But even in October, she won't get 50% because she took hers early. And what's happening is she will continue to get her benefit. And then at the time she applies for a spousal retirement benefit, she will get the difference between her benefit at that time, if she had waited, and the spousal at that time. So let's assume she waited until 66, her full retirement age, when she's eligible for a spousal benefit as long as you have started receiving a benefit. And she will not, so she'll get hers plus a little bit more, but she won't get an amount equal. So it'll be basically, when she took hers at $500, she took a $166 discount to take it at 62. That $166 is going to be applied again, you know, because she will continue to get that number, and that's less than her number at full retirement age. So she won't get quite 50%. So now the question is, what is the size of your benefit? If your benefit's $2,000 a month at full retirement age, she'd be eligible for $1,000 less the $166. So she would basically get a benefit of $334 as a spousal retirement benefit. She'd continue to get her $500. She'd get the difference between her full retirement age benefit and the spousal at her full retirement age, if she applies at full retirement age, which is $334. The question is, would you get more by applying for half of hers? So the cutoff is kind of that $2,000 number. If your number is higher than $2,000, you file and suspend, she takes a spousal from you. If your number is less than $2,000, which means that her benefit will be a lot smaller, then what you should do is do a restricted application, because we know what her full retirement age benefit was, $667. We know that at full retirement age, you're eligible for 50% of that number. So you would be able to get $333. So we have to look at which one's better. The spousal for her, which basically is a benefit of $2,000 or more for you, or the spousal from her for you to take, and that would be the case if your benefit's smaller than $2,000.
Yes, the decision you have to make, and this window of opportunity is open to John and Casa Grande.
Just for a couple more months. Well, he's only got 1 month.
Yeah, well, depending on when he... It doesn't matter.
They do it by the month.
Do it by the month. Right.
He
turns
66, the month full retirement age, in April.
He's got the month of April to do this.
He needs to file and suspend if he wants to do that.
Yeah.
And if his benefit's better than $2,000, he should file and suspend.
Now, for the rest of those who aren't John's age or who weren't,
And if his birthday had been in May, he wouldn't have that opportunity. I mean, if his birthday was May 2nd, he wouldn't have the opportunity. His only opportunity at that point is to do a restricted application, take half of his wife's, because he's old enough to do that. That deadline was you had to be 62 before the end of 2015.
Mm-hmm.
He was. Therefore, he can do the restricted. So he still has both options available to him. Now we just have to see which one provides the larger benefit.
Yeah, these are games we used to be able to play with everybody, and now it's sort of dwindling the number of people that we can actually plan this for, which is unfortunate. Okay, John, thank you for the question. 877-PLANNER, our number. If you have money questions, lines are open right now on Bucket Strategy Investing, 877-752-6637. This is Richard in Las Vegas, Nevada. I will be receiving a large payout from a trust. Are there any investments that provide a guaranteed return of 4% or better?
Guaranteed's a strong word.
Them's fighting words.
In today's world, 4%, I mean, you can get a very high-quality bond that has a 4% interest rate, but it's going to be a fairly long-term maturity bond. It's not going to be one that matures in the near future. So you can get 4% guarantees, but it's a long-time commitment on that. And so are you willing to invest in that for a long period of time? If that's the only criterion, you don't care about what happens in the future, what interest rates do or don't do, and you plan on holding this until maturity, which again may be a very long time, then you can find 4% investments that have an underlying guarantee in the form of a bond or something of that nature. If you're looking for payouts, you can get higher payouts than that, but it's not a 4% rate of return. It's a payout. So we need to look at what it is you're actually trying to accomplish. Are you trying to create, you know, a portfolio that has that 4% rule to it, you know, the SOCI in our vernacular, guideline, not rule, then you may want to do something different. If you want it for a 4% guarantee for a short term, 1, 3, 5 years, no, you're not going to find that. So it's all a matter of your time commitment, and that has some risk to it in the fact that if interest rates were to go up during the time period that you are holding on to this particular long-term note or whatever it is, then you potentially lose some opportunity costs. When it goes up is very important. If the interest rates don't go up for 10 years, then you've done a lot better for the next 10 years than you would have otherwise with other potentially guaranteed investments. So you've got a lot, it doesn't hurt as much. If they go up in the relatively near future rather than long-term future, then you miss out on a lot of opportunity costs for a long period of time. Which one's going to happen? I have no idea. I mean, that's trying to time the interest rate market, which obviously didn't work there very well in the last couple of years. Last couple months.
And it's interesting to talk about, it wasn't really all that long ago where you could 5% just throw your money in a CD.
Right.
And there's your guaranteed return. Oh, by the way, and you don't have to wait 10, 15, 20 years to get it. Well, you can get it over the course of 3, 4 years.
We had money market accounts that were doing that. You were earning 4 or 5% just in liquid cash.
Yeah, so you got to think, although I've been saying this for a long time, that somewhere down the line here, somewhere soon, you're going to start seeing interest rates that are going to be up around that mark again.
We've been saying that for 5 years.
We've been saying it actually probably even longer than that, because when we first started to get into this whole low interest rate, zero interest rate.
2003 was when it first went down quite a bit.
Yeah, and it recovered a little bit, but then it started really around 2007, 2008, 2009. It really took a dive and it stayed down there. And the thought was, well, how long could we have this for?
How low can you go?
It can't be much longer, you know, maybe 3-4 years. And the question was, back in 2008, I remember asking it, saying, well, do you really believe that 6, 7, 8, 10 years from now, interest rates are going to be this low? My answer was no. I did not think they were going to be. Here we are, 8 years later, almost 8 years later in some cases, and we're still this low. So it makes me think that I got to rethink my whole interest rate strategy.
Now, there are other types of investment, alternative investments, that pay 6% and have a pseudo near guarantee, but it's not guaranteed. It's got a little bit of potential.
Yes, and Richard's question was a guaranteed return of 4% or better, so that really wouldn't work for you.
Okay, but there are things out there.
Okay, well, maybe we can talk a little bit about that. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, lines open right now for you. You got a money question, we're here to answer for you. Brain Trust on tap when we come back. Don't go away. Welcome back to the program. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, 877-PLANNER, our number, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. We're here live till the top of the hour, so get your questions in now. If you've got a money question, we'll answer it for you right here on the program. We'll get to some more emails shortly. Those emails you can get to us at wealthed.com. And wealthed.com is a place where you can go to get Social Security questions answered in the form of the Social Security Show. It happens every Tuesday afternoon, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern. And again, it's only at wealthed.com. I'm hosting Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, our guest, although we're kind of co-hosting. Professor Plum helping out with helping out. Professor Plum's answering the questions.
Yeah, but I don't know how to do any of the in and outro type stuff.
I know it, and I've learned so much from you on Social Security that I feel like
I haven't learned anything about the radio side.
But you don't have to. You don't have to. There's no need to do that. You just keep doing what you're doing. The burden is on me. Actually, it is helpful. I will say this. If you listen and watch the program enough, Social Security Show, you will pick up on a lot of this stuff. It seems complicated, and it is, but it all has to do with your individual situation, all right? So of all the different scenarios that there are out there for Social Security, there are probably only one or two that really fit your individual situation. And understanding Social Security really is a key to all of this. So you tune in Tuesday afternoons at wealthed.com, 1 Pacific, 4 Eastern, and get potentially all the answers that you came to get right there. Okay, our phone lines are open, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. I hesitate to do this, but you did mention it before the break, and you can say, you know.
Well, this kind of fits in the alternative category that we talked about at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, which is why I want to bring it up. You had mentioned that, well, the email came from Richard. Richard was asking about a guaranteed 4% rate of return. And you had sort of said that there are certain investments.
True. There are some illiquid guaranteed preferred stocks or other things that pay a nice dividend, you know, a nice payment. Mm-hmm. I hesitate to use the word guarantee. It is a term of time, 5 to 7 years, and at the end of the term of time, you can ask to be liquidated out, and they will either give you cash for the face amount, or they will give you stock into the underlying company. And so whatever the exchange rate is, whatever the stock is, they'll give you, if you had a $10,000 investment in it, they'll give you $10,000 worth of stock. But there's like a 1 to 2 month time period where you can't sell it. It takes time to transfer to your name, mm-hmm. to all this. And so if the stock were to drop dramatically, of course, it also could go up. I mean, but you could, it's not a guaranteed out. It's got a time horizon where you've got some risk. But in the meantime, you get a nice interest rate for the next 5, 6, 7 years. Which is very attractive for a lot of people, but unfortunately, I can't use the term guaranteed.
Well, because it really...
It's not, but it's close, but you can't use the term.
Close isn't really guaranteed, and that's why we
can't
say
that. And Murphy's Law says that you've got to be careful of that. Now, what you can do trying to take some of that away is watch the... Once you get into the redemption period, just see what the stock is doing. I mean, if it's very volatile, maybe it's going to be an issue, but if it's not very volatile, maybe it's not an issue to cash in. Now, they may cash out in cash, and recently the big redemption has been done in cash, so it's not a big deal. But they reserve the right, and it's their choice, not your choice, whether they give you stock or cash.
Okay. Well, there you go.
But, you know, they make a lot of sense for somebody who's looking for cash flow over a 5-7 year period of time.
Yeah. Once again, this goes back to our whole idea of whatever investment you're looking for, whatever product you're looking for, it needs to fit your individual needs. Mm-hmm. What could be perfect for a small subset of people could be, in fact, often is completely the wrong thing for the vast majority of others.
Right. And some of these things, like the one I was just talking about, they don't require you to be a millionaire.
Yeah. The alternative investments you're talking about.
Yeah. Some alternative investments require a certain suitability standard, and others don't. They're more mainstream, so to speak. And preferred stocks tend to be more mainstream.
Somebody wants to buy real estate, let's say, as we get back into this sort of the alternative investments, but they don't have, you know, they don't have millions of dollars. I mean, is this something that should somebody be considering this without millions and millions of dollars?
Sure. I mean, without $10,000, no. You know, $100,000, $200,000, yeah, now you're starting to get into the realm where you can allocate 15-20% to alternatives and get into them with, you know, the ability to do it. Now, there's also funds that are pseudo-liquid, interval funds that are liquid on a 90-day basis, but they're priced on a daily basis so that you can see it a little bit easier. The pricing is not exact because a lot of times there's illiquid assets within the fund, and you can't price an illiquid asset, so they mark it to an index to try to get the valuation.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so there are ways to go from being totally liquid, totally stock market-oriented, totally in towards the alternatives, which for the most part are illiquid. So there are half steps and other things to do to get in there. And it depends on what you're trying to do. Now, some of the bigger projects still have very high minimums. And the reality is if you're doing an individual real estate investment trust, an individual BDC, you don't want to do one for $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. So if you've got $50,000, you want to put 10% of your portfolio in, it's probably not going to work very well to do an individual. It's like buying an individual stock. You're overloaded. 10% of your money's in one stock. That's a bit much. So you would use more of the interval fund type thing at that point. But if you've got $200,000, $300,000, $500,000 and you're going to put, you know, 20% of your portfolio into alternatives, now you've got $100,000 you can deal with there. Now that's where we go towards the core satellite aspect of things, where we have a core diversified holding like an interval fund or something of that nature that has more diversification, a little more liquidity, and then go to some of the individual, you know, securities for $20,000 at a pop or so because you've got enough money to get into them. So how you tailor the portfolio depends on you, the size of your portfolio, and what you're looking for.
Yeah, so to be clear, alternative investments are not for everybody. This is not something that... But
what investment is?
Well...
Cash. I mean, you got to have an emergency fund.
Everybody should have cash?
Some cash.
Everybody should have... Yeah, I mean, I suppose...
And the amount of cash is different for everybody.
Yeah, that's true. I'm trying to think of something that is more universal. But honestly, because there are people with, you know, 6 month time horizons that shouldn't be doing anything except spending their money.
Right, because the goal is, you know, maybe you're 24 years old and you're going to use 100% of what you have as a down payment for a house, or 34 years old, whatever. But everything you've got is going to go into buying this house. That should not be in the market right now if you're going to buy the house in the next 6, 8, 10 months. On the other side, you know, maybe you are 24, 34, you've got the house out of the way, you got everything, and all the money you're saving now, all the thing is for retirement, for your kid's education. You just had a kid 18 years away, you're looking for education. Okay, that's more of a stock market-oriented investment.
And here, once again, is a problem with generic advice, because you might read where somebody who's in their 20s, their early 20s, should be putting everything into long-term aggressive growth. You got 60 or 40 years or whatever to retirement. But there may be somebody out there who's saying, look, my goal right now is not retirement 40 years out. My goal is 4 years out trying to buy a home.
Right. Or how many times have we read, what do you do when you have a child? You start a 529 plan. Well, not necessarily. The only reason I would say that you start a 529 plan when you have a child is so grandparents and aunts and uncles and everybody else can put money into it for your kid. Your money goes into your retirement, your Roth IRAs and other things. Let them help you, that's fine, but they won't help you with your retirement. They'll help you with the kid's education, but you're on your own for retirement. But a lot of the articles are, when you have a kid, start a 529.
Sure, of course.
But it's not for you. It's for everybody else's money.
Now, it could be if you got plenty of money and you got plenty of money to live off
of. How many people have plenty of money?
I know a couple of them, and I'm envious as heck, but that's, you know, no, they've never invited me, you know, to join their families. I don't get it, but there are a few out there. Okay, we got to take a break. We're going to get to some more of your emails. Phone lines are open right now, so if you got a money question, we're live today. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Brain Trust, standing by for you when we come back. Don't go away. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. We're here for you every day. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum answering your money questions. Our phone lines are open, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. We do have room on the phones right now, so please give us a call with whatever money question that you have, and we'll answer it here on the program. Also, emails, you go to wealthed.com, our website. Other good reasons to go there, too, but wealthed.com. At the Find Your Answer link, we will do some more of these emails coming up shortly. I do want to get to some of these phone calls, though. We don't want to leave people on hold too long. Back to the phones we go. Larry is next up in Honolulu. Hello, Larry.
How you doing, guys?
Doing very well. How can we help you today?
Well, I got a question. Bought a house about 10 years ago. It's been a rental for us. The kids have finally moved on. The grandchildren are all on the mainland. We're selling it shortly. We're going to have some proceeds from it. We're going to put about 20% down on a condo, scale down. Just curious, and I don't want to get political, but in an election year, the market typically goes up, goes down when someone wins a party. Am I better off just putting it somewhere safe and just hold it for a little while? I don't really need it right now.
When will you need
62.
It?
Oh, well, I don't think I'll need it for a little while. I'm going to be 62 in June. I'll be taking early Social Security, and the rest will just sit around and grow exponentially, hopefully.
Okay, but you talk about the election year. You talk about timing the market, good year, bad year. If one side gets in, it could go either way, because who knows what's going to happen with the election year, what's going to happen between now and the election. So if you're looking to invest for a year, even if this had always been a good time to invest, it probably won't be for you. So a one-year time horizon is not long enough. If you said on the other side, you know, I'm not going to need this money except for maybe for a long-term care need when I'm 85 years old, okay, that's a long-term time horizon. Now is as good a time as any to potentially invest for a 20-year period of time. So what we're trying to accomplish dictates what you should be investing in. If you're looking at saying, you know, I might need some money from it on an ongoing basis once I retire in a year or so, but most of it I don't need for a long time, then you set it up on more of a bucket strategy to create an income that you can use. If you don't need it, reinvest it for the long term. Use the dollar cost averaging aspect. So let's take a look at how much it is and how much you can potentially take from it if you needed it and be able to rely on that. If you don't need it, fine, reinvest it. It's just nice to know it's there if you do need it, but not 100% safe, 100% aggressive. Now, is this the only money you have in your investment portfolio left?
No, it's not. I have a couple of REITs. I've got another condo. I've got some rental property.
Okay, so you would...
And I've got annuities.
Okay, so you would take into consideration these other things that you have, how liquid they are, how much cash flow that's coming from them, and things of that nature, and match that with what you're trying to do with this money so that you don't buy more of the same unless you really want to, but have a strategy that incorporates all of these issues and then say, okay, now we know where to invest. It's impossible to say where to invest today. If you said, hey, I don't need this money for 20 years, I'd say a diversified growth portfolio. If you said, I'm going to spend all this money in the next 3 years, I'd be saying, okay, now we're looking at cash and cash alternatives. You know, so how long you need it, when you need it, that all dictates how you invest. And so you need a buckets plan.
Okay, I'm going to give you guys a call off the air. Okay. I'm the one who called with my little kiosk, my hot dog stand. And
right.
Oh, yeah, that's
too,
right.
So.
I thought you said
I need to get back out there for that hot dog, too.
Yeah, we do. Larry, if you want to hang on, that's fine, and we can talk to you more about it off the air, okay?
Certainly will. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
All right, thank you for giving us a call. Yeah, I remember that now.
I'm trying to remember where his hot dog stand was. There's one in the International Village that's really good. I don't think that's his, though, but
yeah,
I want to try his, too.
May not be the same one. Okay, so now he's got some, I mean, we're not doing any timing here with regard to this.
No, I mean, unfortunately, nobody can predict what will happen. Yes, it's an election year. Is election years usually good if one party wins and not good if the other party wins? You know, that first off isn't going to happen until November anyway, so you're going to sit on the sidelines in hopes that it happens one way or the other? No, it's all about time horizon. If you got 20 years, now's as good a time as any. If you've got 20 weeks, now's a horrible time. Now, doesn't mean that the market may not make some money in the next 20 weeks. I have no idea. Because it could go up, it could go down. Are you willing to take the risk? The risk of a 20-year period of time, nowhere near the same risk as a short period of time, at least not with the market. Now, the risk of cash is that you miss out on a lot of opportunity of potential growth over the time period you're looking at.
The risk of cash meaning what? Not investing in anything and just holding onto it in the form of cash.
Yeah, you put it in cash. You're not going to earn much, but you're not going to lose anything. So if you have it for 20 years, you have the opportunity to miss out on a lot of growth. If you have it for 20 days, you know, how much you really expect to earn, and does that outweigh the risk? Because you could have a lot of loss in 20 days too. That's what we've seen through January.
We saw that the first part of the year, no question.
So it's all, in my mind, time horizon driven. Now, he may not need any income from this. He's also going through a transition from working to not working. And so I would want to have income available until he figures out what his retired life is actually going to look like and be able to take income if he needs it. And then if he decides he doesn't need it, it's much easier to have the income and not need it than to realize you need the income and not have it, and not be an opportune time to turn assets into an income generation when the market's down. Now you're putting yourself out and you're tempting fate. The other way is you may miss out on some upside potential, but you don't miss out on the downside. So you want to set yourself up to take the income, even if you might not need it, rather than the other way around.
Absolutely. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. We've got some lines open right now, answering your money questions, helping you out with strategy. 877-752-6637. This came in from, I'm guessing, an email. It came in, I believe, from an advisor. And so I don't have a name on this. But anyway, this says, I have a 41-year-old female client in a wheelchair. The husband passed away in 2005. He would be 43 today if still alive. He had MS at the time. What is her access to his Social Security? She's engaged to be married soon to another person. How does this affect her spousal on husband number one?
Well, assuming there's no kids in the mix, dependent children of his, and that she's taking care of, she does not have any access to his widow's benefit at this point. If she were to remain single until she was 50, she would have access to the widow's benefit at age 50. However, if she gets remarried between now and age 50, she loses access to the late spouse. So the person that passed away, husband number one, if she gets remarried before she's eligible for receiving a widow's benefit, now she's tied to the new husband and there is no access to the first husband unless this new marriage ends in death or divorce down the line. So at this point, 43 years of age, there is no availability for Social Security unless there's children involved. And then you could potentially have a child in care benefit. But if you're looking at just the pure widow's benefit, she's not eligible for that until, in her case, because she's disabled, age 50. The widow's benefit, or widower's benefit, you want to look at that way, is eligible for a disabled widow or widower as early as age 50. Now, without that disability, there's no benefit available until age 60. Now, it is reduced because they're taking it early. And a 60-year-old widow will be reduced about 30%. They'll only get a little over 70% of the full widow's benefit. A disabled widow at age 50 would receive the same roughly 70%. So it's not discounted for the disabled person any more than it is for the non-disabled person taking it early.
But it is discounted.
It is discounted. They don't get the full amount unless they wait until their full retirement age to get any benefit from the survivor side.
Now, again, on getting married to another person, this affects it in what way?
It takes it away.
Completely.
Unless she waits for 7 years to get remarried. Now, if she waits 7 years,
That would get her to age 50.
If she's disabled at 50, I'm assuming the wheelchair is a permanent issue, not a temporary issue. If she's disabled at 50, single, applies for and starts receiving a widow's benefit at 50 because of the ability to do so, mm-hmm, for a disabled individual, now she can continue to receive it if she gets married after that date. But if she gets married before that date, The ties to the first spouse are severed. There are no ties for as long as this new marriage lasts.
So the rules are the same, except they're moved back or whatever,
instead of 60.
Up, whatever you want to call it, from 60 to age 50. Otherwise, all the rules apply regarding widow's benefits. Now, I don't know about...
A wheelchair is a disabling event, but it doesn't keep people from not working.
That's what I was going to say. I don't know about working.
If she's working, she has the retirement earnings test. Just like anybody else who's under full retirement age, there is a retirement earnings test. That's that 15,720 number this year. If you're making more than that, regardless of whether you're eligible in the first place or not, you lose eligibility for that benefit going forward until your full retirement age, which for her would be age 67 now.
That's right. So you got a little bit of time, but if you can remain unmarried or at least not be married, this should be this way. Just not be married by the time you hit, by the time she hits age 50. She could get married now.
Be married for like 4 or 5 years, get divorced, get the benefit, get remarried. That's kind of cheesy.
Well, of course it is. But you said before that, you know, sometimes from a strictly financial standpoint, that's the way it can work. Okay, we got more to come. 877-PLANNER, emails, trivia, your phone calls. All coming up next. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Do not go away. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. We're here for you every day at this time. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. Also, emails, you want to go to wealthed.com. In fact, coming up in just a second, I'll tell you where the Brain Trust is going to be hanging out, but you can also find that at wealthed.com, so stick around for that. Coming up tomorrow on this program, assuming all goes well, we're going to be talking about something we sort of hit the periphery of it this hour, which has to do with lifetime income. Now, there are people who just want a guaranteed income for life. They don't care so much about rates of return, internal rates of return, payouts and all this. They want to know that they are getting some kind of guaranteed income, whether they live 6 months or another six decades, you know, whatever it happens to be. So how do you get that lifetime income? Pensions are disappearing. Many people don't have them. Your 401k could potentially run out. Well, there are ways to get guaranteed income. And you can actually buy things like pensions. So we'll be talking about all aspects of lifetime income. That's coming up on this program tomorrow, right here, first hour. Once again, our phone lines are open, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Before we get to trivia, I said the workshops. We got some workshops still to come this month and next month, and I believe even past that. So if you want to find out where the Brain Trust is going to be, you're going to go to wealthed.com. That's a good place to actually get all kinds of information on our program. Wealthed.com. Meet Professor Plum. Meet Terry Keyes. And learn all about retirement income strategies and retirement income challenges, too. You got the challenges on the one side, strategies on the other. And we're all about presenting both of those to you at these workshops. So once again, go to wealthed.com. Find out where the Brain Trust is going to be. Okay, now, one last thing, and we're going to take your phone calls at 877-PLANNER. Here's a little bit of trivia for you here. This is fairly, and I don't know why they're using this particular number, but heirs of decedents. This is from the Boston College Center on Wealth and Philanthropy. Heirs of decedents, that's dead people, are projected to inherit $36 trillion.
You mean heirs of live people don't expect to get quite as much?
Now, somebody said, you mean descendants? No, decedents. That's right. Heirs of those are projected to inherit $36 trillion. That's the net amount after the payment of estate taxes through the year 2061.
2061?
That's like 45 years. I don't know where they came up with that, but that's what they said.
I'll be dead by then. I won't inherit anything.
You're not going to hit your 101st birthday?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's not something I'd put money on.
Okay, all right. You're not planning on that. All right. Anyway, there's your trivia for today. Okay, let's get back to the phones. 877-PLANNER. We'll also get to it maybe, if we have time, at least one more email as we try to work our way through these that have come in over the last several days. Moving along to Paul in Port St. Lucie, Florida with a question. Hello, Paul.
Good afternoon. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great. What's up?
Question. First year college student. I'm applying for my daughter. We're going to do the FAFSA. And I understand that some of that, not necessarily income, but money's retirement and stuff is exempt from being looked at under the FAFSA.
Correct. Retirement accounts are not looked at. IRAs, 401ks, things of that nature.
And primary residence?
Primary residence is not on the FAFSA, but if she goes to a private school, they may look at it.
Okay, my question is, I have approximately $170,000 in mortgage debt, which is slightly over 4%, and I have about $180,000 in cash or capital that is outside of a retirement account. Would it behoove me to pay down my mortgage, submit my application, wait a little bit, and then refi at a lower rate and get that cash back out?
Well, you said this is her first year of school, so you'd have to wait like 4 years. But now, what? How's
Is it a four-year look back?
Yeah, every year you reapply.
Right, but I mean, right now we haven't applied.
Right, but every year, so this is you're doing this for the freshman year. You're going to do it again for the sophomore year. You're going to do it again for the junior year, and they'll do it at that point in time. Now, how much income do you have?
Probably about $110,000 for the family.
I mean, you can pay it off, but the reality is $110,000 may make you ineligible for financial student aid anyway. So the income may make you. I've seen this a lot where, and $100,000's on the cusp, but I've seen people that make $200,000-$400,000 a year, and they hide everything in their assets by putting them into annuities and other things, but they're not going to get the money anyway because their income is too high. So you may want to check into the income limits to see whether or not your income is going to make you ineligible for student aid to begin with before you jump through a lot of hoops. Now, you're a 4%+ on your loan. I'd refinance it once I did this anyway, whether I do it right away because I'm not going to get any federal student aid because my income's too high, or whether I wait a year or two or wait until I get past this and redo it later. I would look at doing it that way. But you can also put the money into an annuity, although I'm not necessarily going to be a huge advocate of that. How old are you?
53. I was going to pay down the max for both my wife and I for last year and this year to put that into our Roth.
Oh, definitely do
that.
Take
care of some of that.
Right. Definitely do that. And I mean, you could potentially use an annuity if you think you can do better than 4% on the annuity. I don't have a problem using it against the house, but I would check into my income levels to see whether I need to do this because I'm going to be able to get financial aid, or whether I need to do this from an investment standpoint, because it may be that your income makes you ineligible for the financial aid anyway, even without assets.
Okay. Do you know, is that clearly identified anywhere? When I looked at the FAFSA, it seems like it's a lot
They don't tell you what does and does not count on the FAFSA. Have to find that out through, I would first talk to the financial aid office at the school where your daughter is thinking about going, and they have a much better idea of what does and does not work there. So use the financial aid people at the schools. They'll help.
Great.
Does that help you out?
All righty, gentlemen. Oh, it helped me out immensely. I appreciate it, as always.
Well, thank you, Paul. We appreciate you giving us a call and asking the questions. Again, we do need to talk a little bit at some point about student aid and
Paul,
college.
Paul, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
What is this cash sitting there for? Why do you have this much money in cash?
It was some inheritance, and I just haven't moved on it yet. We're looking at a couple other options that we were going to go forward with. It's fairly new cash.
Okay, so let's take a look. Let's take a look at the income side of it and then make a plan for that cash.
Yeah, I tell you what, Paul, if you want to hang on, you can. We got to end the hour here. Maybe Professor Plum could talk to you more about this off the air here in a minute or so. It's entirely up to you. If you'd like to hang on, that's fine. We're out of time for this hour, but I want to remind you that if you need the Brain Trust, you have money questions, you have strategy questions, you want to talk to Professor Plum or any of the Lucia Capital Group advisors off the air, 800-644-1150. We're out of time, I said. For Professor Rick Plum, I'm Johnny Dean. It is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member.
member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.